Hamilton with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop renewal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Okay, for those of you wondering, yes, the Horn website has been hacked again. Little bastards. They're like little Ferengis. Like to transport a boatload of tribbles onto them. Ben Birch is on his way home from work. And we'll hopefully get it sorted out in the fairly immediate future. It would appear that the stream is safe and we are going out. WhiteRoseSociety.org is also safe. It's pretty clear that what these rotten little bastards are after is HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. You know, it's funny how that happens. I told off a right-wing POS earlier today, and then bang, we're hacked again. Last night, Sandra and a few others of us were having some fun giggling about the super secret, double secret probation, oh my God, hug tape that the now mercifully dead Andrew Breitbart had been promising was out there. He just didn't get around. He didn't live long enough to dummy it up and maybe Photoshop some hammers and sickles onto Barack Obama's shirt pocket and stuff. But no, it shows that he was friends with Professor Bell, the Jeremiah Wright of academia. That's really what they're calling the guy. And the next thing you know, the Horn website gets hacked. Isn't it funny how that works? Yeah, I thought so. No, I'm not laughing either. But anyway, that's where we are. It's Thursday, isn't it? Yeah, it is. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday. This is the and hopefully we will, understanding that normal is only a setting on a dryer. We will have a normal broadcast week. I tell you that because there is every likelihood that next week will not be. And I apologize for these things, but no, I don't. I'll be gone back to Washington, D.C. next week. I'll be gone back to Washington, D.C. because of work that is going on related to mountaintop removal and related to big things that we hope will be happening in the very near future related to mountaintop removal. And as soon as I can tell you that they have happened, I will tell you that they have happened. John, are you out there? How's your week looking next week, brother? Care to do some radio? John's probably working. And believe me, that's, you got to keep the lights on. No, but I'll be gone either Monday through Wednesday or Monday through Thursday. It has yet to be determined whether it's Wednesday. And if we get up and get out early on whichever day we come home, I'll get behind the microphone just as sure as shooting. Last time we got back about 7:30, so that wasn't really possible. But I doubt we'll be getting that late a start coming home the next time. Hopefully it won't be through a foot of snow, but March, you know, with March you can, there's more March Madness than simply going on the basketball court. Yeah, I presume you've seen the scary hugging video of Barack Obama, right? Yeah. And just throwing something out there for consideration, do you know this? Are you aware of this? That President Obama has been lobbying senators, Senate Democrats, to for them to not support this legislation that would compel construction of the Keystone XL oil pipeline? He's been personally lobbying Senate Democrats over that. I'm sure it probably doesn't matter for a lot of people. He's still just what was it I read somewhere? Bush the darker. Yeah. But no, he is. He is lobbying against the Keystone XL pipeline amendment sponsored by Senator John Hoeven, H-O-E-V-E-N, Hoeven. You know, when B-O-H-N-E-R spells Boehner, God only knows. But he is actively lobbying against the Keystone XL pipeline. It's a damn shame that he would have to lobby Democrats against the Keystone XL pipeline, and sorry, but one of the backstabbers is Joe Manchin, West Virginia, who one of these days soon, if it weren't for the fact that it's an election year and he keeps insisting on running as a Democrat, would, you know, just tear off the rubber mask all Mission Impossible style, and there would be the repig-licking that we know he is. He has broken ranks, as has Mary Landrieu of Louisiana. Gee, it's like Blanche Lincoln never went away. And we all know, of course, that Joe is, in fact, Blanche Manchin. He's just Blanche Manchin with much better hair. He's about as much of a Democrat as, he ain't no Democrat. Ain't no. Jeez, sorry. Joe Manchin is not a Democrat by any stretch of the imagination. They like to... Conservative Democrat. No, damn it. Call him a right-wing Democrat if you're still going to use Democrat. But, yeah, that's where he is. Trying to make sure that that poisonous, toxic pipeline gets built through the middle of America. But it does my heart proud to see that there are those who are out there struggling against building that toxic nightmare. It's past inspiring. If it was possible, A, to get there, and even if they want our help, I don't know. But at least, and the story's a couple of days old, but bears mentioning in this context. The Lakota people in South Dakota have gone so far as to block pipeline trucks from crossing through their sovereign nation. At least five of them have been arrested, probably more. At least five were arrested on Monday alone after a six-hour standoff that blockaded trucks from moving equipment for the Keystone XL pipeline through Lakota lands. They are trying to get a restraining order through the court system to allow them to confiscate any future shipments coming across Pine Ridge Indian land. They don't want the pipeline because they know that it is a grave threat to their land and their lives. And it's inspiring to see this opposition. The next time through, Olawan Martinez says that they expect the trucks to be accompanied by armed security. She said, "You got white racists, white men driving these trucks, probably armed and scared of any Indians. When the white man sees us and their fear overcomes them, they just don't see one, they see 10, they see 100 of us. I'm sure they'll have more armed guards. We'll see, though. We're keeping our eyes out for them now, and it's not just this territory doing this anymore. Other tribes are taking steps to get restraining orders against future truckloads of equipment to enable the toxification of that part of the North American continent. It gives me a chill. Just seeing this kind of bold and brave display of freedom and integrity. How dare them think they could come through our territory to go destroy our drinking water? You know, we don't want no part of it. As far as I'm concerned, they shouldn't be traveling on any part of any road. And then this. America is built on stolen land and was built with stolen hands. XL pipeline equipment, anything that has to do with the destruction of Unkimaka, Mother Earth, we don't want any part of it. They need to stay out of our territory. God, I wish them well. I do. When I first read this story, little hairs stood up on the back of my neck. And of course, that was a woman doing the talking there for the Lakota people. Fitting, in as much as today is this 8th day of March, the International Day of the Woman. Call me crazy, I think every day on planet Earth should be the International Day of the Woman. Being as how there just aren't a heck of a lot of us here who, even some people's gods wouldn't be here. You know, the all-powerful king of the universe had to have the vessel of a woman in order to become flesh. You know, the word made flesh. There's just not a lot of us here who got here without the help of a lot of women. And so one day seems a bit meager, but it's a start. And it is an absolute necessity because of the continuing assaults on women that are going on hither and thither. And for that reason, Kath from Canada, who is often in the chat room, has issued a challenge. She said, is it possible to issue an International Women's Day challenge of some kind? I can match up to $50 and would like anyone who has had a woman impact their life in a positive way, donate today in honor of them. And that is a beautiful thing. So, Kath, who has already contributed this month, will contribute if you will match her $50 as we add our voice, your voice, to the celebration of an entire half of the population of the planet. And a reminder that, what is it, all the property in the world is controlled, well, 1%. It's interesting within the dynamic of the 99% and the 1%. Only 1% of women, or only 1% of the property in the world is controlled by women. It tells you there's still a long way to go. A very long way to go. Longer in some places than in others. It is a great long way to go in places like Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia. But there's a long way to go here in the United States as well. What we've seen in the past weeks and months by way of pasty-faced, doughy white men in the majority imposing their will on women is shameful. but it is also, I should hope, instructive. Coming out of Arizona, a story today, found it over at Raw Story. The state Senate of Arizona, which of course is run by a bunch of soulless Republicans, they approved a bill Tuesday. When I first read this, what? The Senate of the state of Arizona approved a bill on Tuesday allowing doctors to lie to pregnant women if the doctor thinks that the actual, real, factual information might cause the woman to decide to end the pregnancy. Really? A doctor can withhold critical information about prenatal problems in a baby if that doctor determines that the woman he is or she is examining might decide it would be better not to take the pregnancy to term. Oddly enough, where most of this crap is introduced by men, this bill was introduced by a woman named Nancy Bartow. She said, "When I first heard of this issue, I couldn't believe that these lawsuits are actually happening. That some couples, after they give birth to their child that has a disability, would claim that the child should not have been born and would sue to get damages. The lawsuits are being brought imply that the physician is somehow at fault if the child is born with a disability." This is all done under the guise of tort reform. To stop frivolous lawsuits. Ms. Bartow says that a lawsuit could still go forward, though, if there was evidence of wrongdoing. If a doctor intentionally or knowingly withholds information, then a lawsuit could be appropriate. Could be. But then again, how's the patient going to find out that information if the doctor has no duty to disclose the information itself? That's some catch, that catch 22. It's the best there is. The remarks on books last night got the attention of our buddy Brett in Virginia. Brett wrote, "Twilight? Battlefield Earth? Is it April 1st already? I thought that had to be a joke, but the Google says no. Sadly, that is true." What the... I don't know what's scarier. The thought that Willard might really think those are the best novels he's read, or he thinks that's what America wants to hear. Of course, you have to remember the Twilight series, although there's all kinds of angsty vampires in it and stuff, it's all Mormon philosophy boiled down for angst-ridden teenagers, really. Brett continues, "I tried to read Battlefield Earth once, but it was just really bad science fiction, and I have too many good things I want to read and not enough time to do so. And Twilight seems to be aimed at teenage girls, and I suspect I would find it unreadable as well. I'm thinking that much of what I would list as a favorite probably comes from earlier in my life. Philip K. Dick, Vonnegut, Catch-22, so forth. And Romney is, what, 66 or so? You'd think there'd be something there to choose from." Crazy. He adds, "You were way more patient with David from Maine last night, our little disagreement, than I could have been. If Limbaugh and others are not fought, then we're done for." Brett closes saying, "Anyway, I just wanted to say I really enjoy the show, and I always seem to learn something interesting. Thanks." And thank you, Brett, because we get something interesting out of your communication as well. Marty, I don't know. Does that mean if the pregnancy might kill the mother, the doctor can lie to her? if she would go and have an abortion because it might kill her? Sure! Why not? Where's the article I'm reading from about the Lakota blockade? Jeanette, that is at... it's a raw story. It's from March the 6th by David Edwards. Native Americans threatened to confiscate Keystone Pipeline trucks. Should be able to find it. Just dig around through raw story. And Susan says, News Ninja Susan, says, done, and raise you by 50 more. She's speaking to Catherine Canada. She says, remembering Mrs. Patterson, my second grade teacher. So on this commemoration of the International Day of the Woman, there is a challenge now for a collective $100 out there. In memoriam, in celebration, in honor. Oh golly, if I start now, we won't get through the program if I think about all the women who have positively impacted my life. You know, it always begins with mom. Yeah. I can still hear her voice in my mind. And my grandmothers. Grandmothers are incredibly special people. They have patience that mothers don't have. One of my sisters remains one of the most dear people to me. Who else? Mrs. Landers, first grade. Miss Yateman, second grade. Mrs. Van Pelt, third grade. Mrs. Brown, fourth grade. Mrs. Harvey, fifth grade. Mrs. A.R. Allen, Mrs. Metcalf in seventh grade science. Mrs. A.R. Allen and Mrs. Metcalf were the first two African-American teachers I had as a little boy growing up in Alabama. And my God, they were magnificent educators. Mrs. Rutherford in drama, Mrs. Hughes in drama, and English. By that time it was high school, and they took a lot of crap from me and didn't hate me for it, and I'm still grateful for that. Agnes. For some reason or another, I got a lot of traffic last night on the fact that I don't always tell you what's going on in the background of the program here. But starting about, 7:30 Eastern time or so, I told you about Sam Black last night, the multi-distant generational uncle who preached slavery as a basic fundamental Christian goodness. Well, he was a preacher and a circuit rider. He rode all over this region preaching that filth. And, you know, since he was a preacher, which meant that he never actually worked for a living and was fed on the work and goodwill of others, I suspect he could smell a chicken frying from 50 miles away. And I know that to be a fact because of what happened in here last night, because about 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, I began, when the mic, you know, sometimes I take the mic down like and mute it so as not to laugh at some email that comes through. And I started going, because I smelled chicken frying. And I have to be careful of that kind of stuff now. But once the show was over, just a few minutes past nine, my beloved Agnes came through the door of the studio bearing a plate with quite possibly the single most beautiful piece of fried chicken I have ever seen in my life on it, accompanied on the side by a lovely helping of Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat, chicken-flavored, and a great big old dollop of mashed potatoes. And I mean, I fell to on it. There wasn't anything left buzzards to fool with by the time I was done. There wasn't nothing left for the dog to lick off the plate. I damn near ate the bones. And I tweeted later that, you know, if Rush wasn't such a horse's rear end, his wife might bring him a lovely fried chicken dinner after the show like Agnes brought me. You'd be surprised the number of people that got a kick out of that. But it has to be borne in mind that it's hard to fry a chicken when you're being kept in a pit constantly putting lotion on your skin. International Day of the Woman. I celebrate my daughters. Not just the women of the past, but women of the future. Lili, Margie, Doodle, and little Loni, who will be 5 next month, and whom all kinds of repiglickens are hell-bent on controlling. I haven't any patience for that. I haven't any tolerance for that. None whatsoever. News Ninja Susan suggesting, for those looking for a good piece of science fiction fantasy, The Birth Grave by Tanith Lee. It is the International Day of the Woman, so naturally, of course, the jiggling oxymoron had to use that as a reason to attack yet another female. No one has apparently ever taught Jabba the Slut. Still going back, I still think that's incredibly funny. And you know, it does fall into the rubric of taking back the name. No, he attacked today a woman by the name of Alexandra Petri. By the way, today some of his breaks were actually filled by, yes, silence. Quite possibly the best part of the Flush Flimball program that has been experienced in decades. There are no advertisers. 90% or more, I think I saw a report, 90% or more of his breaks were PSAs today in the New York City market. But Flush got himself all worked up and hot and angry today against one of them women folk. Alexandra Petri is a columnist or a blogger or whatever at the Washington Post. And she's a humor writer. Hence the headline, Rush Limbaugh's show targets jerks, judging from the latest ads. But don't rely on me to tell you about it. Let's let the oxymoron.
Yesterday, I explained to you how it is that we have not lost, whatever the number is today, 45 or 43 advertisers. Today, there's a more blatant example of what journalism has become, and it's in the Washington Post. It's a story written by a woman named Alexandra Petri, or Petri, P-E-T-R-I, if you're spelling her last name. I don't know how it's pronounced. Alexandra Petri. And let me read to you the headline of this news story. I don't know if it's in the newspaper or just on their website. But here's the headline. Rush Limbaugh's show targets jerks, judging from the latest ads. Rush, so named for what advertisers are now doing away from him, advertisers learned something about Rush Limbaugh's demographic this week. Here we thought a lot of pleasant, upstanding people were listening to and enjoying the national ratings, things that Rush had to say. Apparently not. Turns out that people who really, truly still enjoy Rush Limbaugh's show, how do I put this, are jerks. So the Washington Post is characterizing you. At least that's what the new advertisements moving into the vast, empty lot of Rush Limbaugh, Inc. implies. So far, he has picked up AshleyMadison.com, the site where you go to cheat on your wife, and another website that is explicitly for sugar daddy matchmaking. There's only one problem. We are not running spots or commercials from AshleyMadison.com. In fact, when we find that they are running in our program in local markets, we call the local affiliate and tell them, don't run these ads in our show. We do not sponsor companies that help people cheat on their spouses. And right here it is in the Washington Post claiming that we are. Now, the people that run Ashley Madison are out saying they're willing to advertise on our program. There are stories in advertising blogs about this, but we have not accepted it. Yeah, right here in the Washington Post.
Now, bear in mind, every time he says right here in the Washington Post, you know how it is when right-wingers read The Onion and they think it's really news? What was the one that really got him going lately? World's largest abortionplex opens in Kansas. Yeah.
Well, we gotta stop it! See what them liberals is doing? They're aborting all the babies!
Of course, it wasn't real. It was made up by The Onion. Well, this, too, is largely made up. Flush Flimball, but you'll notice Flush Flimball operates by the Fields' three commandments, two in particular. You can't cheat an honest man, and don't smarten up a chump. Not to mention never give a sucker an even break. He sits there telling his little the dribbling, drooling, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking faithful that this is real. My friends, this is the news from the Washington Post. Do you hear how they talk about you? He missed that whole subheader there for Alexandra Petri where it says, Alexandra Petri puts the pun in punditry. I got the same press release saying that AshleyMadison.com wanted to advertise on Rush. And I got the same press release that said that because, see, that's how the oxymoron works. He refers to her as a so-called reporter. She's not a so-called reporter. There's no intimation, no hint, no overt claim that she is a humor writer. That's all. And apparently, she got this one underneath the vast quantities, the wide open fields of subcutaneous flesh. And there's a lot of skin to get under on Flush Flimball, believe me. Don't believe me, but you know what I would have gouged I mean, even so much as, like, with a pair of ordinary board shorts on the beach. If I'd ever seen that, I would have stuck my head in a bucket of lye, gouged my eyeballs out, and walked off a cliff, screaming.
And it is untrue. We are not running commercials.
No, you're not.
We wouldn't accept commercials. We have rejected their offers from outfits that do this kind of thing, provide a way for you to cheat on your spouse. We have never knowingly had this company in our program. And again, there are two ways you can get on this program. You can come and be an official EIB sponsor, or you can buy commercial time on one of our local affiliates and become one of 18,000-plus advertisers that we will never know about. Except that things like this, when we find out, we do our best to clear this inventory. So I wanted to set this straight. It is an out-and-out, just like every other report about lost advertisers and everything else that you're seeing, nothing could be further from the truth.
That's why there were all PSAs today. It's nothing. My friends, it is not real. These are not the missing advertisers you are looking for.
New sponsors coming on in the next 2 weeks, three of them at least. As I said yesterday, current advertisers that canceled had a couple meetings with them. They're asking to come back in. There's literally nothing factual being reported about this. So just
he is scrambling for his very life. Can you hear it? Because I can. You don't do all this if everything's okay. After all, he's America's truth detector, right? Yeah.
You know. As though you don't know. I'm sure you do. What is in the Washington Post, either in their newspaper or on their website, is an out-and-out lie. I mean, it's not even close. This is a so-called reporter, Alexandra Petrie, who simply accepts false information from a site, probably, Media Matters, who knows, that she trusts. Oh, we are not running...
No, stupid. It went all over the country. If I'm getting those press releases, imagine who else has, too. Media Matters. This isn't Media Matters. This isn't what Media Matters do.
Huts from this company that tells you how to cheat on your spouse. We never have. And when we find out that they're running on local stations, EIB affiliates, we call the affiliate and we ask them not to.
You mean he interferes with the free market? Hypocrite. But then again, we knew that, didn't we?
Nor will we ever accept such advertising, because you are not jerks.
No, you're morons. Not you, them. You know, the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, oatmeal-dribbling faithful. But do please remember, and I mentioned this in my feed earlier today, do please remember that even if he should happen to get... If canned from Premier Radio Networks, which if I was working for Premier, I'd be, boss, you're killing us here. You got to get rid of him before it catches up with that crap. Can be catching. Jim, Rush Limbaugh's truth, a combination of TASS, Pravda, The Globe, The Star, and The Inquirer. And you know what? If I transmitted that to any of those organs, Jim, they would take offense at being compared to Rush Limbaugh. Really. And you know, he's so innocent, this freak, that they've scrubbed his website. Really. They scrubbed his website. Via the Atlantic Wire, several of the offensive comments have been scrubbed, including the one in which he asks to watch Ms. Fluke having sex via some form of electronic recording. That means that the lawyer has gotten to Jabba. Without a doubt. Without any doubt whatsoever. And speaking of frustrated right-wingers, here's some good news. Part of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, is 1 million moms. Remember how they got themselves all wrought up over that JCPenney and how they hired that Ellen DeGenerate, that lesbian? They gave up. We're going to boycott JCPenney till they get rid of that Ellen DeGenerate. Yeah. They gave up. They also have given up on their boycott of Toys R Us because they're mad at Archie Comics. Can you imagine how sad and sorry and pathetic are the lives of these miserable little misanthropes? Because it really happens. They do. They really do. They sit around talking to you. You know, our country is in terrible mortal peril because there's a cartoon homosexual in the Archie comics. Riverdale has been engulfed by the gay agenda. Arvaline. There is good news out there. These freaks do periodically find out that the rest of the country really doesn't think, if you can use thinking to describe them. They don't, the rest of the world doesn't think like they think. Jesus, God, I just this is just breaking. Got an email from Ben. Apparently the hackers have gotten serious this time. They've defaced the website, and they've deleted every file and directory under the site. That is the price that we pay for daring to speak up to right-wing evil. That is the reminder that right-wingers cannot compete on a level playing field. A little bitty, itsy-bitsy, okay, not tiny, but this radio network is intolerable to the right wing. Can you fathom that? What does that say about them? Aren't they pathetic? Aren't they revolting? Don't worry, Marty. That's all the phlegm ball there is. Unless you piss me off. Michael, who brought to light the fascination of Willard Doggone Carr Romney with L. Ron Hubbard, is offering a little bit more. He says, Mitt Romney is a secret Scientologist vampire. Bob, I think you may have forgotten to mention last night that when Romney was quoted as having really enjoyed the Twilight series, he was quick to point out that he doesn't personally know any vampires. I'm not making that up. He is a vampire. He's sunk his fangs into countless corporations, companies, lives of real human beings, working people all over this country, sucked the life out of them, and shed them as empty husks. But that's me. Michael says, similarly, when he was earlier quoted citing L. Ron Hubbard's Battlefield Earth as his favorite novel, he was quick to point out that he does not endorse L. Ron Hubbard's religion. Methinks, says Michael, while he can't contain himself enough to hide his giddiness for his favorite literature, he nonetheless protests too much too quickly. Clearly, we have a secret Scientologist vampire on our hands, masquerading as a mere Mormon. I'm concerned for our country, Aren't you, Bob? I am, Michael. I am. Can America really afford to put a secret Scientologist vampire in our White House? In November, we must do what Jesus intended for us when he founded this great nation and re-elect the secret Kenyan Muslim socialist. It's the patriotic thing to do. USA! 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 Signed, Michael. News Ninja Susan does note that Ben has gotten the site back up. She says, I don't know for how long, but it's back up. Everybody hit the PayPal button now. And barring that, you can always PayPal, just log into your PayPal account and PayPal to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Because that's the address that's tied to the horn. So, that's where we find ourselves this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Oh, that's not just where we find ourselves. We started out with a little discussion of lying to women in Arizona. Lying to pregnant women. My goodness gracious, that does embody some traditional Christian family values, doesn't it? Naturally, it would be sponsored by Republicans. As I suppose also it is natural that it would be sponsored by Republicans. The following, an overwhelming vote in the Arizona House of Representatives yesterday to repeal, in other words, the law is already on the books, to repeal a law that bans concealed carrying of guns within 1,000 feet of schools. Arizona had a law, seems rational to me, that even if you've got a concealed carry permit in the state of Arizona, by God bless Jesus, that you still can't concealed carry within 1,000 yards of a school. Because, you know, sometimes guns just inexplicably go off, like in a closet in a church in Florida, and blow away the beautiful 20-year-old daughter of the preacher who allowed the guy with the gun into the church in the first place, because that's our God-given Second Amendment right. Right? Yeah, so they had the law, so there were by an overwhelming majority, the Arizona House of Representatives repealed that ban. Then there's Arizona Senate Bill 1474 that would let anybody over the age of 21 carry a properly licensed firearm inside. Okay, the other ban was not within 1,000 feet of a school. Well, Arizona Senate Bill 1474 says if you're over 21 and you got yourself a carry permit, you can carry a licensed firearm inside any educational institution. And university administrators are banned from adopting any policy, quote, that restricts or prohibits the carrying or transporting of a concealed weapon on university grounds. In other words, Arizona is saying, you know what? We're jealous. All we had was a little pissant the shopping center parking lot shooting. By God, we want a Virginia Tech of our own. Jan Brewer, old hatchet face, has not said whether she'll sign the bill. She does, however, carry an endorsement by the National Republican Rifle Association. You want to know the reason for the repeal of the ban? Well, it's hard on parents who carry firearms. Because that means when they bring their children to school, they have to park 1,000 feet from the school just to bring their children to school. Because, you know, they can't leave the goddamn gun at home. Because they're so wrapped up in just ass-deep paranoia. Well, shoot, they can't go to church without a gun. They can't go to drop off little Johnny, little Timmy, little Cindy, and little Susie at school without a gun. You can just see little right-wing mommy and right-wing daddy jumping out of the SUV with their pistols tactically raised. Go, 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 go! As little Tommy and little Timmy and little Cindy and little Susie and little Johnny go barreling out of the back seat, running and, you know, serpentine, Sheldon, serpentine! Getting into the school. So Marty recommends, he says, it's probably best to go directly to PayPal without going through the web page at this point, which might be advisable. But thank you very much. I am proud, very proud to say that today's International Day of the Woman Challenge, as issued by both Kath and answered by Susan and doubled down, has been answered. You're right, Jeanette. She says, I bet unlike Lulsec and Anonymous, none of these hackers will go to jail. No, they won't go to the jail because they're just messing with a little progressive radio show. That's all they're doing. I mean, it's not like they're compromising some site that advances bloodshed and war and all of that stuff. Kim says her contribution comes in for Janet, the greatest spiritual being I was entrusted to have a friendship with. Thanks, News Ninja Susan, for letting us know that we can get in right now. Signed, Kim. So we find ourselves now at 7. Minutes, 7 minutes before 7 p.m. And we'll take a little break and come back. You know, of course, that this is conversation radio. It's how the whole thing works. And we will go to your calls as soon as we come back from the break. We're going to take the break. It is Thursday, therefore we have one of my favorite things during the week, the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and, more importantly, I suppose, Desi Doyen. She's the brains of the outfit, you know. Brad would tell you that, too. We'll do that and come back with your phone calls, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333, email to Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID, @gmail.com. We'll be back. Light 'em up. We'll talk soon. I'm Bob.
I'm looking for a hard-headed woman, one who'll take me for myself. And if I find my hard-headed woman, I won't need nobody else. No, no, no. I'm looking for a hard-headed woman, headed woman, one who'll make me do my best. And if I find my hard-headed woman, I know the rest of my life will be blessed. Yes, 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 yeah, yeah. I know a lot of fancy dancers, people who can glide you on the floor. Oh, oh. They move so smooth, but have no answer. Oh, 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 oh. When you ask what you come here for, I know why.
Thursday, March 8, 2012.
We're not going to be able to just drill our way out of the problem of high gas prices. Anybody who tells you otherwise either doesn't know what they're talking about or they aren't telling you the truth.
Obama fires back at Republicans over rising gas prices.
The next time you hear a politician say he or she will bring down oil prices, understand it's complete BS.
Right-wing hypocrisy on pain at the pump. Plus... the world's first climate change refugees.
All of that and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The science that saturated fat alone causes heart disease is non-existent.
Just like the global warming science is non-existent.
Oh, it's a twofer, Rush. Well done. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, I was watching Fox News yesterday, and all the right-wingers there were saying that Germany and the rest of Europe were all cutting back on renewable energy, cutting back on solar and wind power because it has been such a failure over there.
And it ain't true.
Not true?
Not true at all. Actually, renewable energy is going like gangbusters, especially in Germany, where it's providing up to 20% of Germany's electricity needs. What's actually happening in Germany is they are cutting back across the board for an austerity program, and they are cutting their solar subsidies.
So they're cutting everything?
Yes, they are. It'd be like saying that the Defense Department doesn't work because we're cutting back on defense spending.
Or education doesn't work whenever we cut back on school spending.
Yep.
So, another lie from the right and Fox News.
Yep.
I am shocked. What else do you have for us today?
Here in the U.S., President Obama is firing back at Republican attempts to use high gas prices as a campaign cudgel. In a White House briefing this week, Obama mocked Fox News correspondent Ed Henry's suggestion that he actually wants higher gas prices.
Ed, just from a political perspective, do you think the President of the United States going into re-election wants gas prices to go up higher? Is that Is there anybody here who thinks that makes a lot of sense?
As Media Matters shows, though, back in 2008, when oil prices were at an all-time record high, surprise, Republicans and Fox News were singing a different tune.
No president has the power to increase or to lower gas prices. Those are market forces.
And with oil prices and supply and demand and gasoline, it really is out of this president's hands.
Yeah. Today, oil hit a record high, and politicians cannot do a thing about it.
Get rid of those gas guzzlers. Buy a decent insulation for your house. Get on the stick and do some more mass transit infrastructure spending.
The next time you hear a politician say he or she will bring down oil prices, understand it's complete BS.
Speaking of complete BS, you're saying that back in 2008, Fox News was trying to convince people that the President of the United States has nothing to do with gas prices?
That's right. And the only way to reduce gas prices is to reduce consumption. And to that end, President Obama on Wednesday doubled down on clean energy in a visit to a North Carolina company that manufactures trucks that run on natural gas. He proposed more ways to boost electric cars and electric car batteries and to deploy more of America's clean energy industry.
We've got to develop every source of American energy, not just oil and gas, but wind power and solar power, nuclear power, biofuels. We need to invest in the technology that will help us use less oil in our cars and our trucks.
And that seems to me to be at the heart of all this right-wing crazy talk. The right-wingers are actually freaking out. They are terrified because the rise of clean energy is a direct threat to oil. Here's Mitt Romney.
We all like wind and solar, but you can't drive a car with a windmill on it.
Rush Limbaugh.
There's no solar energy business yet. There's no wind energy yet. It's not there yet.
And Newt Gingrich, who on Tuesday mocked the U.S. research and development of algae as a biofuel.
One of our campaign techniques should be have people go to gas stations with a jar of algae. And say to people, would you rather have the Gingrich solution of drilling and having more oil, or would you like to try to put this in your gas tank?
But Newt was for algae biofuels before he was against them. Here he is back in 2008.
I'm an outlier in this because I have such faith in science. My hunch is that biofuels, in fact, will have a significant piece to play in the future.
He was actually praising the use of algae biofuels back in 2008. These people have gone mad.
Finally. While Republicans fight to save America's oil addiction, on the other side of the world, the Pacific Island nation of Kiribati has already lost the fight to save their land. They'll likely be the world's first climate change refugees due to rising sea levels. Several islands have already been lost, and the rest are projected to disappear beneath the waves in 30 to 40 years, so the Kiribati president has begun negotiations to relocate their 100,000 citizens to Fiji.
They're going to relocate an entire country?
Yes, they are.
And yet folks on the right continue to tell us that global warming is a hoax.
Yes, they do.
I guess we have to wait until we relocate Florida. For more on all of these stories and those we didn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. We rely on you to keep telling the truth over your public airwaves. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
past the hour. Email coming in from Kate on the Front Range. She says, enclosed is my 50 to honor my grandma Kate, my namesake, my aunt Zenobia, who gave me permission to be myself beginning at the age of 2, to the First Nation women in Canada, Montana, and South Dakota who are struggling to preserve their land. Kate says, I smile at the statistic. Women control only 1% of the property. If that's so, why are the men all so afraid of us? Another uprising on the Pine Ridge Rez. Goddess, when will it end? When Remote Access Medical was there last year, we served over 850 folks. 403 of the services provided were for children. The water is hardly potable. The Indian Health Services Hospital is operating under a cloud of politics and low funding. The roads and highways in and around the res are in bad shape. They don't need those big equipment movers on them. We had them moving through Montana. What ruinous monstrosities. We're taking another remote access medical clinic to Pine Ridge in July. Kate closes saying, it is absurd to try to list all the women who have influenced me. Angels, dykes, sluts, and bitches all. Yep, we can use those words. Remember, sluts means southern ladies under tremendous stress. Rush has no idea. And he really doesn't. Kate gets it straight up. You know, I think back to the celebrations of the god Dionysus, Dionysius. What were Dionysius's female acolytes and attendants? Were they the Maenads? Somebody help me here. But in the earliest days of the Bacchanalian revels, you know, these misogynists would be well to remember this in human history because it's happened. The Fisher King myth is huge almost everywhere you go because at some point in history, some male was selected to be ritually slaughtered by the females. And I think it was just a not-so-gentle, mythologized reminder of who really runs the show. Dionysius's acolytes would chase a male down and tear him to pieces. So too was a male selected in many other cultures who was ritually sacrificed for the good and fertility of the land. You know, I take that stuff seriously. Because beginning thousands of years ago, the males of the male of the species began getting uppity, and I think it's all no. Like Kate says, it's some of it's born out of fear. A lot of it's born out of fear. Because we know that as males of the species, you know, we have one thing to contribute, and then we're pretty much useless. That's why the males in the beehive are called drones. But before going on to the phones, just a little something to share with you, because the singing in the Green News Report reminded me that Jude sent this in, and when Kate sent her email dedicating her Day of the Woman contribution to the First Nations women of Canada, South Dakota, and Montana. Well, it seemed to fit perfectly with this. Thank you, Jude, for sending it along.
Hey!
you can hear that and not have your soul stirred or your spirit or whatever you prefer to call it, I don't know. Those are the Crazy Horse Singers. It's called the Highway 18 song. It was put up as tribute for the Lakota Blockade Heroes over at Censored News. B.S. Norrell, N-O-R-R-E-L-L, bsnorrell.blogspot.com. And they are heroes, because it takes tremendous courage to stand up against that kind of entrenched power. Jude says, we will hold and align with the women who are able to honor the Day of the Woman with you. In honoring of International Movement of Women, there in grace presents itself in action. The gifts from women come in so many and unique ways. Jude says, I love it. And thank you. Thank you all. A quick email coming in from Peter, who was listening to yesterday's show. Listening to the Wednesday show about soccer and Islam. It is in the Quran, Bob, that one shall freely commit offsides when playing soccer with the infidels. That was probably on that stupid, bigoted, ignorant, knuckle-scraping questionnaire that the TAPS organization sent out. Why do you want to play soccer with people that you hate? What are your feelings of the role of Sharia law in America? I ran across News Ninja Gene, sent it to me earlier today. You know, he reads the entire internet before breakfast every day, News Ninja Gene. He sent me a post along, and it was a beautiful thing. Came from, I think, IrishTimes.com, but it was a rabbi who has pointed out that the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops wants to make America submit to its own version of Sharia law. And, of course, we've observed the same thing on this program in the past. All these freaks passing these Sharia law bills, whether it be Florida, Oklahoma, South Carolina, what have you, what they really are saying is, we don't want any competition because we want to impose our own theocracy, damn it, and we don't want another fox in the hen house. Thank you very much. Freely may thou commit offsides when playing soccer with the infidels. Thank you, Peter. Thank you. And to the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program. You know, it was easier when the busy signal was there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Jim.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Well, I'm not well. This whole hacking of the website thing's got me a mite pissed, and I think Ben's about ready to go on a rampage, and John ain't doing too well either.
Well, I must admit that is a bit of a sticky wicket, isn't it?
It stings right smart, as we might say around here.
I can certainly understand. Well, first, my own expression of admiration for this day and the people to whom it means a great deal.
Indeed. And
really, I mean, you know, you think about the influence of women in your life, whether it's your mother, whether it's your aunt, whether it's your sister or friend or whatever, you know. What would life be like without?
Non-existent? I mean, can we start there?
There you go. That's the first thing right there, absolutely. I mean, as far as the reproductive cycle is concerned, the man puts, what, 5 minutes into it, and the woman puts 9 months? I think it's time to give her a little more credit, don't you?
Well, you know, Jim, you must know some real he-men making 5 minutes out of it.
I'm not going there tonight, but that's all right.
Well, shame on me for trying to take you, but, well... Yeah.
That's fine.
Richard, a long time ago, Richard Pryor said, I think it was on Wanted Live in Concert, he said, you know, he said, I got all these buddies who are telling me, oh, yeah, we were at it for an hour, 2 hours. Richard Pryor said, damn, I'm good for about 2.5 minutes, and I need 8 hours of sleep.
Well, there you go. Mae West once said she loves a slow man who takes his time.
There you go.
But, you know, second item here, referencing the gun thing. Did you hear about the people who were killed in the psychiatrist's office?
No.
Yeah. There were two people killed and one person was wounded by someone with a gun in a psychiatrist's office. Now, Bob, that's really where you need a firearm, is in a psychiatrist's office.
See, you know? The irony is not lost on me either, Jim. And I don't mean to chuckle. I'm not chuckling. It's not funny.
I'm not either. I mean, you know, when I pulled up the internet page this afternoon, I saw it and I said, oh, my Lord. Why are these people, in the first place, if they are in, you know, if they are concomitant with the law governing firearms and they're in a psychiatrist's office, why are they there?
What state?
Didn't say a state. I was too busy with other things, but it was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Naturally, there will not be a press release. No, you know what the press release from the National Republican Rifle Association will say, Jim? Well, if only more patients had been armed in that room, this might never have happened. They never get to the part where maybe it turns into a complete misbegotten massacre.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could imagine it would be like if you had ping pong balls with mouse traps on, set on mouse traps and throwing one in there in a room full of mouse traps with ping balls, it would have been a chain reaction. You know, good Lord.
But see, that's... Again, in many faiths and many religious traditions, there are certain things that you have to have. Sometimes you have to have a bell. Sometimes you have to have an incense censer. Okay? Sometimes, you know, there's all kinds of things, the drums, you know, whatever. But in America, firearms have become so fetishized that they are actually part of, you could say, a quasi-religious orthodoxy. Because you can't... In America now, even in our so-called civilized, but at least civil secular society, to suggest that there are places where guns don't belong is to invite upon oneself cries of lack of patriotism, accusations of insufficient dedication to constitutional devotion. It's ridiculous. Psychiatrist's offices?
Yeah, psychiatrist's office. Not only is it ridiculous, it's dangerous.
You know, Tucson Elementary School number 6?
I'm not sure, Bob. I just happened to see the item.
I mean, what...
For parents to go to school carrying a gun? Why? Why do they need to carry a gun? I mean, I don't understand why people need to carry a gun on their person anyway.
But you and I both reside in almost level West Virginia, Jim, and you know as well as I do that on any given day that you walk into Wally World, somebody in there is packing heat.
Well, I know, but I'll never go to Wally World. I won't go there.
I know, but you're not safe at Kmart either.
I don't go there either too much, to tell you the truth.
I mean, I've done
all my shopping online and stuff like that, and I try to absent myself from most contact of all these crazy people. I really do.
And I will not. And I will suggest that that may be about the sanest thing you can do.
Well,
I mean, I will never forget. Bless the fellow's heart. His store burnt down because our local privatized water company had turned the water off to the water hydrant, fire hydrant, I might add. But we used to have a little store, and it was incredibly convenient and easy to get to, and they had the best bagged ice on this side of the New River. And I went up there one day for a loaf of bread or, you know, something innocuous, and I'm standing there in line behind a guy who's carrying strapped on his hip in a holster and everything, you know, one of those daggum dirty, hairy cannons. Because you never know what's going to happen when you go out for a can of pet milk.
No, you really can't think of what could happen to someone who is carrying a weapon like that of just what might cross his mind or what might incur his ire or wrath. And so, you know, he might draw a reasonable conclusion that he has justification in using it. You know? I mean, all these crazy people who've done these wild things with firearms, whether it's at Virginia Tech or wherever, or whether it's at Columbine, or, you know, they had it in their mind some type of justification, whether it's real, whether it's imagined, whether it's legal, illegal, sane, insane.
And we're just a week past another school shooting. Wasn't that one in Ohio?
I'm not sure, probably.
Because it was last week while I was gone. Three kids dead, two of them wounded.
Well, you have all these things that are perpetuating the use of deadly force, whether it's in, you know, these games that kids locate buy or download or whatever, and that whole type of conflict resolution by use of a deadly weapon is not only reconciled, but it's glorified.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing. I mean, these people don't know what it's really like to be in a firefight situation and to see the damage that these weapons can do. I mean, they're just play toys to them. They're just things that they, think are just blurbs on the screen or whatever, and they become so desensitized to it. And the roots of what happens in the later developing individual becomes reality when, you know, they really think that's, in their own mind, the real thing to do or the right thing to do. Whether it's right or wrong, sane or insane or whatever. It's just crazy. It's just crazy. I mean, I've been brought up with weapons all my life, as I told you in an email.
Yeah, and that's so much the case for lots of folks, especially in the South and the West.
Well, you know, and I've taught people how to use weapons. I've taught people how to use mines. I've taught people how to use light anti-tank weapons. And I'm not going to go any further than that. But, you know, one thing about teaching that, it's called combat indoctrination. We're talking about soldiers, and that's their job, to defend themselves. And, you know, to use force when force is necessary. And, you know, that's just the military part of my background, okay? That's it.
Sure.
But in the civilian side of the world, well, it's a different situation whatsoever. Absolutely. But not...
Well, let me add a little bit to that conversation just for a moment here, a little bit more detail on the shooting in Pittsburgh, Jim. And this is telling. Authorities now say that two are dead and seven were hurt in the shooting at the clinic at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, UPMC. Emphasis on University of Pittsburgh.
That's it. It just says psychiatrist's office. Yeah. And when I read it.
Bear in mind that the legislation under consideration in Arizona would absolutely forbid any administrator at the University of Pittsburgh from preventing that person who carried the firearm in from doing so.
Well, when you go to a hospital, for whether it's for a mental problem or a physical problem or whatever, why do you need a firearm? I mean, you're going there for help, not to hurt. Maybe I'm just stupid. Maybe I don't see things the way people do. I guess I don't.
Well, no, you don't, and I don't, and the Horn family doesn't, Jim, because there's no way that more guns makes things better off.
No, it doesn't. Like I said, in my life, I have seen the damage they can do. I have understood what they were designed for, and I understand their place in the world today. But it is not in hospitals. It is not in schools. It is not in in a convenience store or whatever. I mean, I can understand perhaps a man who has a convenience store that's been robbed, who is legally licensed to carry some type of protection. Maybe in that case, I don't know. Because you have people who come into certain places to rob convenience stores and, you know, just kill the people out of, you know, kill the proprietor or the person who's run the cash register out of right. But, I don't know. Having seen the damage of what these things can do, it's beyond my pale of understanding. That's what I'm trying to say, and not very well, unfortunately.
Well, I understand it, and so does everyone else, Jim. You know, the story out of Pittsburgh says there was no hostage situation. This was just someone who went in to do some killing.
I remember 15 years ago here, there were a group of people, a father and two sons. All of them were under psychiatric care on psychotropic medication, and they went deer hunting. And they ended up getting into set two, and they all killed each other. Father and two sons.
I remember that. I remember that.
Remember
too
that?
Well, yeah.
2 years ago, back in 96, 97? I think so. But moving on from that, you know, as far as the Indian situation is concerned, I mean, my heart goes out to the American Indian. I think they are probably... of all the minorities in this country, they are definitely up there with the individuals who have been so mistreated, so misguided, and lied to. And they're still trying to do it. They're still trying to take away their land. They're still trying to take away their resources and to decimate them in any way they can, whether it's economically, physically, mentally, or in any other way of denigration. I really believe that. My heart is with the American Indian, the Native American who was here before any of us were. And when I think of what we did to him or them and how many treaties we broke with them and how we lied to them, put them on reservations, gave them, the British did, blankets infected with smallpox. Well, who do you think got his ideas for all that stuff? 100 years later.
And oh, but.
Find it so well in a second book that was never published. Adolf Hitler.
Oh, he cited it approvingly.
Yeah, he not only did he cite it approvingly, he modeled his programs after the subjugation of the Sioux Indian tribes.
Well, Jim, I know you are one to sit and enjoy.
It was made on 23 April of 1939 when Roosevelt had asked him would he attack Poland, and Hitler was very sly and masterful. It was the best speech he ever gave as far as oratory. But nonetheless, he also said, Mr. Roosevelt, you accuse me of warlike means. Well, how did you settle your problems with the Sioux Indian tribes? By council meetings? I don't think so. Not exact words, but those are the words of his speech that thundered out of Berlin on 23 April 1939. I'm sorry.
No. That's I didn't know the precise date, but I did remember him making that reference. I was going to suggest. I know that you are one for reading and appreciating good books. And with this, this discussion seems a great time to mention a brilliant follow-up book. Charles C. Mann, about 5-6 years ago, wrote a book called 1491, and it was a brilliant overview of what the Western Hemisphere was like prior to the arrival of Europeans.
Oh, it was a paradise.
And he has since written a sequel, and I have been reading it of late, and it's called 1493. And it's about the effects of what has been identified and is called now the Columbian Exchange. and the rise of a world era that is that some scientists refer to as the Homogenocene?
Well, there are a number of series that I've seen on television recently and years past called America Before Columbus and before the advent of the European expansion into the New World.
And this book, 1493, Mr. Mann goes to great pains to explain exactly how the changes were wrought and what changes were wrought by the introduction of European plants, European flora, European fauna, and particularly sort of carrying on with the work of Jared Diamond, European disease.
Oh yeah,
the whole vectoring. It's fascinating, Jim. This is, I mean, knowing your love for detail.
I know the books you're talking about. I mean, for example, where do we get the potato?
Well, that came from Peru, sure.
And, of course, the potato was transported back to Ireland, and it also was transported back to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Because the potato, it enabled people to, in Europe, for example, the city of Berlin would never have been built or expanded were it not for the potato and its cultivation. Because of the cultivation, it allowed population growth and expansion, the development of cities and things of that nature. It was quite beneficial to Europe to have the potato, as well as the tomato. I think
the tomato took some catching on. I remember being in Washington, D.C. a couple of years ago and sitting down to eat over in the Woodley Park area at an Afghan restaurant. I'd never seen an Afghan restaurant, but I thought, by Jove, you know, when will I see another one?
Oh, there used to be a wonderful one on M Street.
Well, I sat down in this one, and one of the things they offered was the Afghan national dish, and lo and behold, the darn thing was made out of pumpkin. And just because I'm the weirdo I am, I mean, I didn't say anything, but I got to thinking, well, this can't have been the Afghan dish, national dish, for much more than 200 or 300 years.
No, because pumpkins came back across to the old world.
Right. And so on the other side of this, the 1493 book, you would be fascinated with it, as would many of the Horn, most of the Horn family, because, I mean, the chapter on what the ready, easy availability, easy relatively speaking, of Mexican silver did to the world economy is just stunning to read. But the description of the rise of the malarial vector up into northern Europe and its arrival in the New World and how it gave rise to the institution of slavery is stunning.
Listen, the amount of silver that came from the mine of San Luis Potosi was just incredible. To fill the coffers of the Spanish kings and queens. It really was. But at what price? A great price to the people who were enslaved to mine it and the land that was ruined so that it could be removed. There were a lot of bad exchanges there as far as disease and things like that. I mean, you know, for example, we were, as far as the expansion of Europe into the New World, we brought smallpox, which decimated a number of populations. I mean, we're talking about decimation, 90% decimation in certain Indian tribes. And, of course, it's reversed that, you know, the French pox or syphilis was brought from the New World to the Old. Well, that's what they say.
Well, that hardly constitutes a fair trade.
Well, no, it isn't. But let's face it, we're not talking about symbiosis here. We're talking about degradation, and we're talking about ruination, and we're talking about a total lack of humanity. I mean, there was one priest of the Catholic Church, I think his name was Bartolomé de las Casas.
Yes.
Who wrote back to the Vatican and was saying, you know, it is horrible what is being done to the Indian tribes in South America.
Yeah, he was actually designated protector of the Indians.
Exactly. And what was done to these people, and what's still being done to them, is, in my mind, very, very bad. and it set an extremely bad example of the so-called white man's burden on designated inferior races. And it doesn't sit very well, and it never will sit very well with me. It will sit very well with me, excuse me, on that use set. But nonetheless, you know, it's just incredible how history is absolutely populated with these wrongdoings and, I'll use the word delicately, indiscretions and horrible actions that were perpetrated on the peoples of the New World. I mean, for example, in America, it said that you could probably walk from coast to coast and bounce from tree to tree.
Or at least to the Mississippi River, yeah.
Without even touching the ground. Exactly, to the Mississippi. Well, and, of course, they came, they took the trees, they stripped them because they stripped their own forest bare for whatever. And, of course, they used them for their ships and their whatever. And, of course, with the decimation of the forest, these people had to leave. The whole ethnography, you know, ethnological and biological conscript was totally changed. It was just horrific. And it happened in, like, less than 100 years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it really began serious inroads within 100 years, and then within 200 or 300 years, I mean, lands that were an absolute paradise were turned into something that's a very antithesis of paradise. And that's a bad thing. It really is.
Yeah, I think it's in human nature to play what if games with ideas of if you could go back in time and do X, Y, Z.
I would try to do things a little bit differently, or if I had control of the situation, I would certainly try to ameliorate the conditions. And, of course, the last thing I want to say is about Rush Limbaugh. He has really taken a hit below the borderline on this one.
I hope so, Jim.
I hope he has. I mean, you know, I really think that people are going to believe, you know, what purveyor of filth this guy is.
But if you heard the clip that I played earlier,
yeah, I did.
You know that part and parcel of what he does, he's caught in it. That clip I played, he was overtly lying to his incredibly gullible audience.
Well, he's hoisted himself on his own petard, because even though his gullible audience might believe his lies, and what I mentioned to you in my email about white TASS and red TASS, white TASS was the notification that was put out in the Russian newspapers for the consumption of the rest of the world. Red TASS was put out for party consumption. There was a difference in the two papers, okay?
Okay.
You know, he has definitely hoisted himself on his own petard, and if the people who are stupid enough to accept that as entertainment don't get it, then maybe enough of them will, and maybe enough of them in the corporate structure are going to realize, hey, this guy is poison, and he's had his time. And you know, Bob, all people had their time. They can strut and fret their way about the stage, and they can make their tales that are tales told by an idiot signifying nothing, but their end must come.
It does. It must. And how else to characterize Flimball than by going into that same quote you just mentioned and noting that his life has been nothing but a tale told by an idiot
signifying
full of sound and fury.
Signifying nothing. Absolutely right. And like I say, I don't know how Rush, if he's into women, could deal with a woman who's not inflatable. Honest and true.
Jim, honest to God, in the quietest moments, my friend.
Like I said before, Rush, don't bite them on the ear, because they might fart and fly right out the window. And then if the press got a hold of that, they might think the UFOs are circling your Florida compound.
Oh, and that's the absolute truth, you know. And you bring, at some point earlier today, I was actually going to look up some biographical information, but I didn't get around to it. You know, we're talking about four wives. None of them within no marriage with any real staying power.
And no children.
And no children. And within the context of this debate of and his slander of Ms. Fluke, that is not just some sort of salacious observation about his life. It is central to it. How has this man been able to be married to... So you're married to one woman, and one of you... and there's no children.
Well,
there are there are plenty of childless couples out there.
But he ain't dead.
But when one guy goes through four marriages and there is never a child...
Well, yeah.
Something's up. Because, even Henry VIII's wives bore children.
Yeah, they did. I mean, definitely Henry VIII definitely had several. He had three that I know of. He had Mary Tudor, and then he had Elizabeth, and also he had a son who died when he was about 15. But as far as Rush is concerned, I can tell you what ain't up. I don't care how much Viagra he takes.
Well, I mean, there are.
I don't mean to be salacious here, but I'm.
No, but there are there are medical questions to be raised. Many people think that. Sorry, that sounds a little Fox style bookish, but there, syphilis can make you go deaf. Right.
Oh, it has a number of tertiary syphilis or secondary syphilis. Yeah, particularly in the last stages, it does everything. It destroys the whole human system.
And you have to remember, Rush is in his 60s.
Neurological to cardiovascular.
He's in his 60s. He was of age to be drafted in the Vietnam conflict, Jim. And it is known that he evaded draft, was 4F or whatever, or got pulled out of the lottery. I'm too young to really know how it worked, I'm sorry to say. I apologize for my ignorance. But the upshot of it was...
Maybe he checked the box. You never can tell.
Well, no, he didn't. He was excised from the draft in Vietnam because of an open, weeping cyst on his anus. It has a medical term. It is called a pilonidal cyst.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's not on the anus, is it? Is it at the base of the spine, a pilonidal cyst?
Pilonidal cyst, is it at the base of the spine? Is it down? Okay.
It's the base of the spine, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, pilonidal cyst. I've seen that happen many times.
But it's open, won't close, has hair grown up in it. Yeah. Well, there I go, ruining dinner again.
It's basically suppurating. That's the term to use. Yeah.
And that was, that was the diagnosis that got him out of Vietnam. God only knows what it really was.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because remember, he puts out this man of the people persona, but he's not.
Well, no,
the Limbaughs were well-heeled, well-moneyed people in southeastern Missouri. He came from a long line of lawyers. His daddy owned a radio station, I do believe.
Yes, he did.
And that's where he got his first job. He went on to flunk out of a community college or Southwest or Southeast Missouri State University, something like that. Somewhere out there, I've read accounts of a former roommate who said that, just straight up, look, the guy's gay. And this is no program that will ever criticize someone for being gay.
Understood.
That's just stupid, among other things, and hateful into the bargain.
But what becomes hateful, Bob, is when you are gay and then you try to turn on other people who are the way he has.
Right, and the whole point is that, all the Mrs. Limbaughs, none of them have ever evinced that they have conceived children.
Right.
All of them have gone quietly away, never to be heard from again. And the present, as Sandra keeps asking, where is the current Mrs. Limbaugh? Because it's kind of weird, given the obsessiveness of, and I think you'll agree with me, Jim, given the obsessiveness of our celebrity gossip-driven culture, especially our entertainment culture, It's kind of weird when somebody of a profile such as Limbaugh's has a spouse and a big splashy wedding at which Elton John sings.
Which I have never quite understood.
And then you find out, well, everybody's got a price. Even Elton John.
Oh, yeah.
And then, but then after that great big splashy wedding, which was 2010, for one of the two celebrants thereof to completely disappear from celebrity culture radar?
Well, Bob,
that's more than a little strange, Jim.
Remember the place where we talked about where Jimmy Hoffa and the Lost City of Atlantis and other things? Well, who knows? I don't know. I mean, not to be light of what you're saying. I mean, who knows? I mean, they could have been silenced or bought off or...
Oh, I'm sure they... I mean, there were divorce decrees in all of them, and I'm sure that there was a... He was making good money, and I have no doubt that there was a gag order included in the settlement.
Well, you know, as Mae West again once said, a little hush money can do a lot of talking.
You know, that woman ought to be revered as a prophet.
Her birthday should be a national banking holiday, Bob.
I tend to agree.
Along with Pearl Bailey.
Oh, absolutely.
I have always said that Pearl Bailey's birthday should be a national banking holiday, and so should Mae West. And I can name Lena Horne, and I can name Dorothy Dandridge, and so many other women.
We almost need a secular calendar of secular saints.
Well, I guess you can call them that, but they were people who contributed greatly to our culture and our own sense of humor and sense of entertainment and just delight, the absence of which we have now. There's so little delight now in the world.
That is so true.
And there's somebody, I mean, who do we hear about now? We hear about this woman who's the girl who's gotten into so much trouble.
Lindsay Lohan.
And Snooki and all these creeps. I mean, my God, Paris Hilton. Who cares? I mean, there's just, as far as I'm concerned, Untermensch. I mean, they're just trash. And just people who, for some reason, occupy the conscience of the public because they're promoted by somebody, or they have a publicist or whomever. I don't know whether it's money, but it's not producing anything good. And I'm sorry to see that. I really am. But like I say, you know, those women are some, among so many other women, all the way from Madame Curie to, well, I can't even begin to name the women who have contributed so much to our culture. I mean, who can begin to name them? We'll be here till tomorrow this time naming them, wouldn't we?
And it might be some of the better time that is being spent in this country on radio itself.
I would believe so. And listen, I'm taking up too much of your time, and I'm going to get off here and let somebody else talk. I didn't mean to take up so much time and take up your microphone. Okay?
Never apologize, Jim. Never apologize.
Well, you take care, and I hope you have a very good night. And all my best to your wife and her lovely family.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Thank you kindly.
Good night, sir.
Good night. Jim is a guardian of the memory of an America that had a little bit, or perhaps a lot more, class. I think you have to say. By the way, an announcement coming along from John Fox. The website has not been rehacked. He had to take it down for maintenance purposes. The assaults that have gone on this time through have been brutal. Somebody out there, or some group of somebodies, really, really, really doesn't want this program to survive. It's that simple. Let us go onward. Oh, darn it. Okay. Well, that time I got the busy signal. Uh, just a recommendation again, if you are part of the, and it's one of the refreshing things about doing this program. I can't imagine doing right-wing radio and having to talk to people night after night who, you know what? I love them Left Behind books. I can't wait till Jesus comes back and we get to get our rifles out and shoot the non-believers right there out in the streets. And I got that Left Behind game and them little homos and the game marks them with pink triangles for you and you can just blaze away. There's a reason if you listen, and I forget who it was that said it in an email last night, and I apologize for not remembering, but said that Rush. If you really want to hear the outflowing of pernicious effluvium, go and listen to a third-tier right-winger, like a Mark Levin. Not Mark Levine. He's a different guy. Mark Levin. He's a Limbaugh coattailer and a horrible hate monger. Now, dadgummit, Kate, there we had a whole bunch of talk about the Columbian Exchange, and there's plenty of erudite stuff in there, but yes, are we just about done with Rush's sperm count, his rectum, and his penis? I'm just about to go play solitaire and listen to some ZZ Top. Can we move on to something more interesting? This borders on gossip and speculation and BS. And from Jeanette. Damn it, will you stop? Are you in a contest with Stephanie Miller for The Grossest Show? I used to listen to her all the time. I've been disappointed when I woke up on weekends and realized she wasn't on. Then the addition of guest hosts, increasing call-in guests, sexy liberal crap, reduction of Jim Ward's contributions, especially Obama-pologia and Demopologia, turned me off. Sorry. If I'm ever, seriously, that book, the 1493, it would be instructive to own and read 1492 first, if you haven't already. But then, if you really want to understand all the blood, all the torment, all the horror, all the hell that white society, European society in this hemisphere was grounded in, you get hold of Charles C. Mann's 1493, and you start reading about it. And while there are very few people that I consider worth the effort to bring on as a guest to this program, he would be one. If we took the whole 3 hours and he just laid it all out for you, you would sit there, stand there, lie there, however it is you listen, just shaking your head in amazement at it all. The transformation is stunning to contemplate. From the microscopic to literally the largest fauna that Europeans could domesticate, this whole hemisphere was turned upside down. The other thing from last night's discussion. Go and read. Go and do something right-wingers who adore the so-called free market never do. Go and read. Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. It's out there for free on the interweb tubes. Read his commentaries on slavery. And that's 1776. Because Charles Mann goes into it at some length in 1493 as well. And it's not over yet. The destruction of what had been literally a paradise for a population of the planet larger than the European population and the Asian population. in terms of density and yet sustainable in the Western Hemisphere is not done yet. Our good friend Dr. John in New York sent me a Washington Post article today that just, well, I just shook my head in grief. He sent it to me from a place of sadness as well, frankly. An article in the Washington Post, Mexico City's ancient Xochimilco floating gardens are in ecological peril. It's worth the time it would take you to go and find it and just read up. Because this was a method, a means of controlling one's world that was so genius and so innovative that the ignorant Europeans couldn't even recognize it as the genius it was. And now they're almost done for. These so-called floating gardens, they don't actually float. But that beautifully fragile ecosystem of the Valley of Mexico, I told Dr. John when I wrote back, I said, you know, it's way up on my list to see that part of the world. And now I fear that A, my inability to get there, and B, its inability to continue to exist are going to keep it from ever happening. I've got a couple of pet things that I'd love to do. One, and we're coming up on the date, one would be to, on March the 15th, take the final walk that Julius Caesar took before he was murdered by the 1%, because that's true. Julius Caesar was murdered by the 1% of his day in the name of taking the country back. Really? Go read the damned history. It's that, as Jim so often says, history is not linear, it is cyclical. And once upon a time, the Roman people were having their own 99% upheavals, and the response to it was to kill off the man who was being a bit of a populist. He was a patrician nonetheless. We've talked about this in the past. So that the power elite could be ensconced and the poor could be, the 99% could be put in their place. So one of my things is to be there on March the 15th and take that walk, just to get a sense for it. Because it's all very definable. It's very doable. The other is Mexico City. Third on the list is Cusco, Peru. And I don't know why I have such a fascination with those cultures, but my God, what we lost through the religious bigotry, the superstition, the fear, and the stunning ignorance of people who just happened to have the benefit of a little bit better carpentry to build a boat to get here. I'm going to build a time machine, take a submarine back. And it would do away with me, of course, but take a submarine back and just torpedo Columbus and every ship that came this way and let these cultures develop on their own. God, how brilliant they would have been. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Yeah, I wonder if they're gonna now that they brought him into the limelight, if they're gonna baptize Derek Bell, the Mormons.
You know what? Oh my God, I hadn't even. That's horrifying to contemplate. But who's to say he hasn't been already?
Well, that's true. You know, maybe something worth investigating. But listen.
But he may be down on the list because you know he was a black man after all.
That's true.
They've only been human to Mormons since 1975.
And the different levels. But anyway, listen, I was dying last night on the Twitter. I mean, I hadn't laughed so much in a long time because when I looked at that one tweet when they said Obama's hugging Malcolm X and that shit was him hugging Denzel Washington.
See, I thought you were just being funny in your own right because, you know, you've got a knack for that. But no, those right wingers That was for real. Those right-wingers really believed that a picture of Barack Obama hugging Denzel Washington was actually him hugging Malcolm X.
No, listen, I just couldn't even believe it. You know, I just thought, you know, this we're still in big trouble because that was just way out there. But still, I was laughing, and I was thinking, you know, it's pathetic. That's supposed to bring down the presidency of Obama, him hugging Derek Bell?
Well, you know, it shows what a radical communist he is. One of the funnier moments today was when and it happened on CNN, when one of these right wing idiots appeared for purposes of describing what it meant, because you know Derek Bell was an advocate of critical race theory.
Yes,
and tried to offer this definition of critical race theory that, among other things, wasn't what critical race theory was.
Right. I don't even know. I can't even bear to hear a sort of definition of it from these freaks. But anyway.
Oh, well, sit down and strap in then, because I've got it right here handy.
Mm.
He said, Derek Bell is, and this particular creep was Joel Pollack, an editor from Breitbart.com, naturally. And he said, Derek Bell is the Jeremiah Wright of academia. He passed away last year, but during his lifetime he developed a theory called critical race theory, which holds that the civil rights movement was a sham and that white supremacy is the order and it must be overthrown. Barack Obama was... And at that point, Solenoid O'Brien just said, stop it. It was actually a proud little 1% for-profit media moment.
Oh, I know. Well, yeah, I heard about that. She couldn't really take it. No, that's, but still, it's just, incredible. I don't understand this whole idea now that it's okay, you know, to attack, I guess it's okay to attack black people now because Obama's the president. I'm trying to make the jump because it's just in full effect. Because with Limbaugh, he's been being racist against blacks for decades, and you know, all of a sudden
that's a stock in trade.
It's all coming apart after he, you know, went off on this white girl. I don't really care. I don't care how it goes, and I wonder if they're gonna, you know, come rushing back to him in a couple of months. I mean, I don't really know how it works. I mean, how long can he go without the advertisers?
I don't know. If he's how many years has he been earning no less than $40 million a year?
Well, what I mean is that, I mean, I guess suppose the people who own his show, is that him? Does he own his show? Or?
Yeah, he owns Excellence in Broadcasting or whatever its corporate name is. And then Premiere carries it, and Premiere is owned by Clear Channel. Clear Channel is owned by Bain Capital, you know, and the line that goes out to Romney.
Are they trying to say that the fact that these sponsors are pulling from his show, it affects the other Premiere talents? Is that the latest?
No. I'm just. That's just me wondering at what point the rest of the Premiere talent looks up and says, you know, how long until this spreads to us?
Oh, right. Well, I just, you know...
Because Premiere is the problem here.
Yeah, because they're the ones that put out that statement saying, oh, we support him because we need to hear all different sides or some BS.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the round up the usual suspects line for that crowd.
But that's Premiere saying that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they will support him for as long as they want because that's the airways that they, quote,
But this is also the entree into a question that I've asked, and I don't have the knowledge to answer. I mean, you really need somebody who is deep, deep, deep in forensic accounting.
Oh.
Because if they're paying him in excess of $50 million a year, that means that, and Premiere itself has a big stable, and they've got a lot of executives, but that still means that he's got to be generating more than he's making.
Well, that's the thing. There's no way. And what I was laughing at is that he's been running all these.
I mean, how do you make how do you generate $50 million in ad revenue on LifeLock and Pro Flowers?
Yeah, I don't really know. But then again, these organizations will lose. I mean, Fox lost, what, $100 million before they started turning a profit for like 5 years?
Yeah.
So, I mean, unlike our side, if you want to look at it like that, they seem to put up with a no money-making media if they have to.
Well, that's because the ideology matters more than the money, which is weird talking about Republicans, but it's very much true.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, I just, you know, I'm sort of, I was laughing because they were saying that some of the public service announcements are sort of getting a bit grimish about the ads running on there. So he might just have some dead, how about just dead air? You know, I mean,
well, he had dead air today.
No, but I remember listening to Air America, and I was always shaking my head thinking, oh, because that had more dead air or just music or just anything but advertisers. And you knew when you heard that situation that that wasn't a good sign. So if you're telling me that's what's going on Rush's show, that's hilarious. Essentially with his big, talking about we got people coming back and all this song and dance, I don't know about that.
Well, they think that some of them may think that they'll slink back in after a couple of months after it all dies down. But honestly, I don't think it's going to die down this time.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, that's what I mean. I have no idea. It also could be time. You know, his time is time for him just to wind down and go away. But I'll tell you one thing. If he was to disappear from the air, I bet the stories about the wife and every other sort of deviant will just start popping up. Watch. It'd be like Tiger Woods, you know, when they fall.
Well, yeah, I mean, remember the story's still out there of him getting, you know, the reason he stopped being a DJ in Pittsburgh was a certain bust for pandering.
Yeah, pandering a dick?
Gay pandering. up there in the Hill District, not too far from the University of Pittsburgh campus.
Well, I mean, I suppose we should be careful before we get accused of being homophobic or something. Anyway.
Well, no, it's his open secret. You know, the man who taught him which fork to use with the shrimp and the salad was a very prominent gay man who literally taught him how to dress. The whole My Fair Lady thing. You know, taught him how to walk and talk and act just like a blooming socialite. The guy's dead now. But is responsible for building him into what he was, and for him to then turn around and be the homophobic, racist, misogynistic freak that he is. God, it's bizarre. You know, there'll be a biography. What's Kitty Kelly doing these days?
I know.
Wouldn't you love that a Kitty Kelly bio?
Well, the thing
Limbaugh?
About her is that people made noises, but. Girlfriend never got sued.
Nobody sues her. Oh, she's lying. She's lying. Well, she's lying. Sue her.
You know what I mean? So that's what I look at. I'm looking at, well, I don't see nobody exacting a pound of flesh from her, so she must be telling the truth.
There you go. Yeah.
Hey, listen, did you manage to look at that? I never do that, but I had to forward you that email about the new latest trade agreement that's being negotiated in secret?
Yeah, I did.
Well, it's just, there's just no end. This one is in, this is the Asian one, and they're saying that it's NAFTA on steroids. And it's in secret, and 600 corporations are able to participate, but no government, state, or municipalities are having any input at all?
Yeah, and what we're talking about is the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement.
Oh, right. Sorry about that. Yeah, that's what it's called.
And it's getting a lot of heat in Australia, among other things, according to this thing you sent me along from Public Citizen.
Yeah, well, and it should be, but the thing that's really disturbing is the investor state arbitration business. I don't know if you heard about the Chevron thing.
No.
You know how they had won. They won in several legal arenas, including Ecuador, and they were told to pay $18 billion to settle up from Chevron's destruction of the rainforest down there, right?
Yeah.
But they took it to an investor state arbitration. You know, as a multinational corporation. They think they're entitled to that remedy. But that remedy includes just three corporate lawyers deciding that, oh, no, they're not liable. Now, these things are now trumping every redress on earth. It's incredible. I don't really understand how, you know, they're able to just walk away from $18 billion based on what three corporate lawyers are saying, with the backing of the treaty, I guess. But anyway.
Well, is this further evidence, Sandra, of the self-consumptive nature of capitalism run wild? I mean, I don't, you know, the thing that grabbed me out of what you sent me about this TPPA is exactly what you mentioned, that the no government can have any input to it. I mean, when the Australian Chamber of Commerce,
right,
hooks up with the civil society group saying, oh, hell no.
Right.
Something's got to be wrong.
And also, you wouldn't believe, I mean, countries have paid millions upon millions to these corporations to settle these tribunal decisions. California paid, I don't know how much, to a Canadian company about additives that we didn't want in our fuel, but they demanded payment for lost profit. You see what I'm saying? I mean, this is, states can't afford this sort of attack. You know, if you don't want to poison your people, you got to pay up to these corporations because they're losing profits. I mean, it's stunning that these trade agreements are featuring these sort of tribunals. I just don't understand how international law can be distorted and like this.
Well, and that's the problem. It's international law. I mean, I know the right wing loves to hate on it and stuff if it involves maybe bringing murderous troops to justice or anything like that, or, you know, murderous leaders for that matter. But because it's international, that means it's all fluid and in flux and subject to change. It's kind of like admiralty law. In the realm of lawyering, you're not allowed to say that you're a specialist in anything. You can't say, for instance, I'm a divorce specialist. You can't use that word. But where admiralty and patent are concerned, you are allowed to say that you're a specialist, oddly enough. And admiralty, because it's the law of the high seas, where no particular sovereignty exists. And what we're seeing in these agreements, Sandra, is another situation similar to that, where it's a sort of corporate controlled anarchy.
Well, yeah, and to look at these entities, you know, being able to usurp all other central authorities. I mean, this latest one, though, as you said, I mean, capitalism has a tendency to sort of overreach, much like the Republicans. And I think that this Texaco thing might be a huge overreach, to the point where, you know, people are starting to think that these tribunals, you know, aren't gonna work. So, I mean, we'll see, because this one is just so over the top.
And the fact that nobody can know what is in it.
Yeah, and people are starting. You know, people are getting. It's causing problems. So it could be, you know, it could be the thing that kind of brings those tribunals down. I mean, one can only hope. But I'm sort of in awe that they're even in existence, you know?
Right. Well, they're contrary to they're contrary to the notion, the theoretical notion of state sovereignty.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, and it's sort of.
And what do you do when they go in and murder an indigenous tribe because they happen to be living on their on you know, some corporation's oil or natural gas or coal? And again, as Preston pointed out a couple of nights ago, it's always coal, oil, natural gas, the uranium, gold, silver, copper. You know, those are the ones who are most willing to go in and who gives a damn what happens, get rid of the indigenes.
Well, it's funny because you had the same sort of investor state business when Argentina said, you know, F you, and we saw the sovereign went out on that. They just said, F you. How are you going to get your money? You're not pissed off. So there are instances where that kind of fails. And the thing in Greece may be featuring some of that because some of them hedge funds are like, oh, no, we don't want to take any losses at all. So, you know, there's a big battle royale with all that. And, I mean, they're trying to say that everyone's in agreement, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see. I don't, you know, I think that all these sort of checks and balances are so suspect because the people who run the derivatives control are the same banks that control everything else. And so if they say there's not a credit event, then all those people are going to lose money on their little bets.
And suddenly, people. Right, it, goodbye.
Yeah, so anyway, I just, you know, Andy, I'm just thinking that, Lenin is definitely right with the sort of cannibalization of capital.
Well, and eventually it almost can't help doing that, and I guess that's the next question is what happen, you know, what happens when it does? Is, you know, the Euro members were busily out there today saying, oh, no, everything's fine, everything's going to be okay, everything's stable, and we're ripping off Greek bondholders and good for us.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it hasn't it been stable the last four times they came out and made this announcement?
Well, that's thing. They keep saying it, and yet it keeps,
you know, it keeps
every time they turn their back on it, it goes back to its cannibalistic ways.
And it's interesting because Spain, you know, who elected some right-wing, they're like, uncle, you know, we ain't meeting our various targets, A, because I, you know, as a prime minister, an elected official, I can't not address 49% youth unemployment, Brussels, so F you. So we'll see how that plays out. That's something to look out for. Spain is in big trouble, you know?
And
they can't do austerity anymore. You know what I'm saying? They can't do it.
Right, and I think it was during the Green News report that Brad and Desi sort of deconstructed this whole argument that Europe is turning its back on sustainable energy. Well, no, austerity has struck there too.
Well, yeah, it's just, you know,
and it is struck in Germany.
Yeah, well, that's the you know, ground zero for the love of austerity. But I mean, austerity is just cover for we're going to do our best to destroy the welfare state. I mean, if you listen, there's this interview with Draghi, the European Central Bank head, and he basically said, I mean, in print, that we need, you know, there's too much rigidity in the labor force. Blah, blah, blah. That's all code for they want to crush wages. You see?
Well, that's all code for just plain old-fashioned, straight-up Milton Friedman, isn't it?
Yeah, well, he's basically saying that, that they want to end, you know, what's left of protections for the working classes. And they're just blatant about it now. So, I don't know. I just was sort of, that was really disturbing. So we'll see. I mean, it's definitely sort of a war on working people and whatever protections, you know, we have. And I think that, you know, the re-election of Barack Obama, you know, may usher in some really frightening things, to be honest. I'm sort of thinking.
Well, I mean, I'm still not okay with that process. Is the process, the due process is what, it, you
do
know.
You?
Yeah, it's whatever you're due.
Yeah, what?
But it did serve to sublimely piss off some Breitbart fans last night.
Oh,
I got hateful tweeted by somebody with like 7,000 followers or something saying that I'm a disgusting liberal who will sink to any level because we're filled with nothing but hate because we were, you know, right, because Breitbart got taken out by a drone strike because he had video that had been broadcast all over creation long before of, you know, a young Barack Obama hugging Derek Bell.
Oh, Yeah, but it wasn't Breitbart who rolled it out. He's dead. It was his so-called good buddy. So what are they talking about?
Well, no, see, he had promised that he had it, and it was going to be earth-shattering.
No, but see, if they really had some respect for the dude, they would have kept that under wraps, because that's a piece of crap. I mean, that's why they're being laughed off the tweet stream.
Yeah, with that all those hugs that were running around last night.
Yeah.
No, I was busting up. And you know, Twitter. I know it's all privacy invasive and gross and scary, but there's a lot of fun to be had on Twitter.
Oh, no, listen, I take it at you know, it's like whatever I'm saying, I already know it's out there, and it's just whatever.
When I threw down with Captain Queeg and got you.
You know, I couldn't even believe it. I was rolling.
You know, because Breitbart had the strawberries. I gotta ask you though. We have consumed so much of our time with that disgusting jiggling wad of flesh, Limbaugh, that it's. I'd forgotten to mention that there is another entrant. I tweeted it earlier today. There's another entrant in the race to the bottom of the barrel.
Oh, well, no. What was it?
This editorial cartoon from March the 4th by Mike Lester of the... And we've talked about him in the past. He's from Georgia somewhere.
Oh, is that the same? Yeah, what's this one? I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Well, it's the same topic, Sandra Fluke. And he depicts her sitting at her testimony table, you know, with this sour little expression on her face, looking askance out of one eye. And standing next to her is Barack Obama wearing purple pants, a green shirt, a dollar sign bling with a fur coat and a cane and a Huggy Bear hat. In other words, done up as a pimp. And the speech balloons coming from him are, "She just wants to have recreational sex and you to pay for it. It's not exactly a new concept."
Wow. I mean, you know, wow, I don't even know what to say about that. Give me a break.
Did they not look at the calendar? Did they not know that the 8th was coming up and that it was the International Day of the Woman?
I figure it's all, you know, yeah, I don't know. I just think that these white conservative men are just, what can I say? They're freaked.
Well, it's like Kate said, scared to death.
Well, they definitely seem to be scared of the pussy. I mean, I don't know.
Well, and again, that's what Kate pointed out. And I don't get it. I honest to God don't get it. I was looking there a few minutes ago. No merit, you know. Limbaugh stayed married to Marta for 10 years. That must have been the contract term, and then she got to say goodbye.
Oh God! Well,
but that was the longest one.
Well, no, I mean, a couple of people I was following and following on, you know, they've been sort of tweeting what it was like for women in the recent past. Like, this one was like, in 1979, when she went to apply for some credit, she had to have her husband's signature on the application. In 79, same year, if you want to get your tubes tied, you have to get permission from your husband.
Yep.
I mean, in 1980, you still could... rape your wife, because when you say I do, it was I do and do and do.
Yeah, well, and it was a chattel transfer.
You know, and so, you know, it's kind of, that's, you know, it's just...
I do whether I want to or not to do?
Exactly. I mean, it's just kind of, you know, we're talking about all that, you know, I was a teenager and shit was still real frightening. So,
Well, going back to the economic discussion real quick, Sandra, David in Tennessee has a question from the Just Asking department. He said, isn't it one of our biggest tasks as rational actors on the world stage to dispel the myth that capitalism is not a zero-sum game? Really, people should even consider it as other than a game to have mine, you lose yours, right? And you know, where he's going with that is... Basically, there's not that the way it operates today in this predatory fashion. It's not that far from mercantilism, because mercantilism argued that that every gain by one had to be accompanied by a loss by another. Whether it was tobacco, cotton, sugar, gold, silver, the more I've got, the less you've got.
Mm.
And isn't that the cannibal consumptive nature?
Well, yeah. I mean, and they've lost their mind because at least when Roosevelt was around, they knew that they had to buy off the working people in some fashion. All these sort of inroads into a safety net was a buying off of groups, because there's always winners and losers. But you can't have only losers, or you have, you know, the third estate. You know what I mean?
Right, and people with literally axes to grind.
Right, and so there was a reason for, it was either the safety net in Europe or war. I mean, it was sort of not a middle ground. So that's sort of a
right, because at the end of World War II, there were a number of people who recognized that it might not have been the end of World War II. That there were enough people up and ambulatory. To keep, you know, to decide to have at each other once they got stuff built back up again, especially in light of the fact that everybody was going to be out of work.
Yeah, well, you had 20 years previously. You just came out of the war that would end all wars. So, I mean, they had to come up with something, and, you know, buying people off was the way to go. I mean, now they seem to have forgotten that lesson, but why they think you're not going to have the same result is what I don't understand. What's different?
No, I think one of the arguments you can make is that there's a sector of the profiteering class that not only doesn't care if they get the same result, kind of hopes for it, because remember, you know, war is good business.
Yeah, no. I get.
But this time through, who's going to build the tanks? Who's going to build the aircraft? Who's going to build the guns? Who's going to build everything that we don't have the industrial capacity to build anymore? And you know, I've pointed this out in the past as well. When the Second World War broke out, we had an idled production sector. Now we just don't have a production sector.
Right, but we have all sorts of weapons of mass destruction, though. I just think that it's a really dangerous situation that we're in, you know, because whatever war manifests itself is going to be, I don't know what the hell it's going to be. So that's why it's a bit of a worry.
And while I would like to hear Barack Obama say, we're going to study war no more and we're not going to make war on Iran, at least saying, because it's got a little bit more of a tenor of sincerity about it, I guess, or maybe I want it to, that we're going to work out diplomatic avenues long before we ever get to any of that other crap.
Unless I lose the election and then bombing starts in 5 seconds or 5 minutes.
Right, or unless it looks like maybe that would help out, 4 weeks before the election.
Well, no, but the thing is I don't know. I don't really know, you know, what Israel is going to do, because like I said, their biggest problem is, you know, not so much that they think that, you know, Iran is going to bomb them off the face of the planet. It's more of them losing their hegemony in that area. That's what it's all about.
I had an email last night that is salient to this discussion. Ron and Raleigh, who often writes in during our conversation, said, "The Israeli tail is furiously wagging the American dog." And this is yesterday evening. He said, "I just got out of my car after having listened to an interview on All Things Considered with Israeli Ambassador Michael Oren. I was truly amazed at the tenor of the questioning. It is obviously a foregone conclusion that Israel has the absolute right to preemptively bomb any other sovereign nation on the mere suspicion that they may at some time in the future acquire a single nuclear weapon." And, of course, that has a name, doesn't it? That's called the Bush Doctrine, isn't it, Sandra? Funny how these things come back to haunt us. Ron continues that they may use in a national suicide attempt by using it on Israel, a country that at last count has over 200 land and sub-based nukes. Ron says there was no mention until late in the interview that Iran may take a bit of umbrage at their country being bombed. The interviewer couched an Iranian retaliation. This is the part that made me just run around the room screaming. The interviewer couched an Iranian retaliation as a terrorist attack on Israel and America. Where the U.S. and USA and Israel are concerned, no other country has the right to defend itself against preemptive attacks, and any retaliation is terrorism on their parts. The saber-rattling and the drumbeat gets louder and louder and louder as the dog wags furiously.
Well, I mean, I was really taken aback when, I forget the general's name, but he came out and had the nerve to say that he believed that Iran, they were rational actors in the international community. He had to walk that shit back. Because, but what he was saying is the truth of any reasonable nation state. And do people need to be reminded that Iran is a part of a signature to the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty and Israel isn't? I mean, to me, I'm just like, well, Iran is participating in an international regime. What's Israel's excuse?
Deterrence? What?
No, it's just a bunch of BS.
It's part of it's part of the grand Israeli thumbing of the nose at the whole rest of so-called civilized society.
Well, you know,
because they are. They it's just true. They're a pariah state. And like you, I'm not talking about Israeli people.
But what do you call a country that has a highway where only certain people can drive down?
How is that not an apartheid state?
Sun City? I mean, what the
yes, hell? Right, Sun City much?
I mean, I don't know, I don't really have to mince words about what Israel has turned into. I mean, they brought it on themselves. They didn't have to go this route.
No, they didn't. And Gaza doesn't have to be the forlorn, traumatized place that it is. The fact that that government is so thoroughly willing just to tell the United States, who carries that nation on its back, piss off and mind its own business.
Well, and didn't he drag out the Book of Esther and the Persians? I mean, I was like, oh my God! And so they have the Persian villain and hello.
Well,
isn't Esther Persian?
Oh yeah, there's an old vendetta there.
God, I'm just like, wow, it's just sort of over.
Esther and Haman and of course, oddly enough, though, it's also forgotten that somewhere in the Old Testament that a previous Persian emperor, or perhaps subsequent Persian emperor named Cyrus.
Mm.
Is referred to as being blessed of God, because he's the one who allowed the Israelites to go back and rebuild the temple. But that's not convenient to this storyline.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, they have to harken back to all this sort of eliminationist rhetoric, and it just is. It's really disturbing because their solution is to make war. On Iranians, and it's just like, oh no.
Well, and I don't know how I would feel if I was part of the populace and was listening to Ehud Barak run around saying, 50 Israelis won't even die if we start a war with Iran.
Well, I mean, a lot of people agree that maybe the ability of the Iranians to sort of retaliate severely wouldn't really be a problem, but it's the sort of mid to long term problems that are going to pop up because of this.
Well, do they even consider the population demographics of a country like Iran, where 40% of the population is under, or 50% even is under 30?
Oh,
that's a lot of people who won't give it. What, they bombed us here? Give us planes and parishutes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. Who knows? I mean, I think that. Just the level of instability along with the Syrian situation, it just sounds like a something that really shouldn't happen. I don't know. Anyway. Oh, listen. So what do you think about the whole Peyton Manning thing?
Do you think he'll...
Not to change subject.
No. And no, but after all this seriousness, we have to afford ourselves a few moments of shallow.
Mm.
Is Denver still a? Did you see that quote or that comment attributed to John Elway?
What do you say? I know Denver is in the mix, aren't they?
That he's really not confident in Tim Tebow's ability to lead the team and thinks that Peyton's got to have a few more good seasons in him?
Peyton, yeah, I thought that that was a...
I saw that, and I didn't get to track it down. That might be one of those moments where I'm getting my ass busted by the Onion, kind of like Rush did by the Washington Post, but...
No, I was listening to, you know, Mike and Mike or somebody when I was in my car this morning, and they mentioned Denver. So I heard Miami and I don't know where else, Arizona or something.
Yeah, see, Marty's right out there. I'll become a Broncos fan again if they sign Peyton.
Shut up, me too.
But what, I mean, what kind of medical guarantee is there that he can survive the first sack?
Who knows? I was thinking, damn.
Dude has discs fused.
Neck fused, right?
Yeah.
Oh, just the thought of it is making me feel, ugh. Imagine getting hit. So he's just going to.
And it's not exactly like that Denver offensive line was doing a star-spangled job of protecting Tim. And that guy is what, 6'6 and 240?
And he's like under 25, don't forget.
Yeah.
And Peyton is like, listen, they just told dude, hell, we ain't paying you $28 million. You gotta go.
See, if I'll say this, I'm just right. Yeah.
I mean,
no, they gave him an apple and a roadmap and said good luck.
I don't care either way. I just think it's always a spectacle with the football, but it'd be interesting to see where he ends up. But
well, and
it's like a train wreck, though. I don't really want to see someone, you know, become some sort of quadriplegic.
No, I don't. I'm scared of seeing that. But from the spectacle standpoint, Sandra, just from the spectacle standpoint, the biggest football market in America is New York, where Eli, baby brother, had to stand up and yell to be heard at the beginning of last season saying, I am an elite quarterback. Okay?
Yeah, but then he was drowned out with the Lynn sanity, so he can't get no respect.
Right, but now, I mean, come on. If granted, what's his name? Sanchez?
Oh, that
has been the darling of the New York media, and he's a golden boy, and he's a bachelor, and he's the, you know, the second coming of Broadway Joe Willie, I guess.
Well, until he's, you know, having sex with some 18-year-old daughter of a hedge fund person.
But imagine that. I mean, can you see what a media circus it would turn into if the Jets were to say, you know, why don't we just bring Peyton in for a couple of seasons?
Yeah, that team is also in the mix, isn't it?
That's my understanding. And Cossack just wrote in and said the Redskins are salivating at the prospect of getting a couple of good years out of Peyton.
Oh, I forgot about that 4-foot asshole Snyder. Yeah. He'll pay it. He'll pay whatever. That dude spends. I got to give it to him.
But what does he get for it?
He didn't get nothing. That's because he's a 4-foot-tall asshole with money. That's what happens when you're that short.
You sign Albert Hainsworth.
Listen, let me not pick on that man, but he's an A1 asshole.
Well, and meanwhile, from the other sports commentator. David in Tennessee says, Miami has Peyton's home. He said, the Finns have Howie Long's son as a left tackle. Him stud. Peyton likes him some badass left tackles. So, and you know, that kind of stuff comes into the calculus.
Well, is Parcells still there in Miami?
I don't know. No, no.
I thought he was because I think he is part of that organization, you know, the no disrespect, and then he starts talking about japping people.
Yeah, Marty notes the Jets, the Redskins, the Cardinals, the Seahawks, and even the Texans have been mentioned.
Oh, the Texans, they ain't going to take him. See, they got something good going right now. Why would they?
You would think, yeah.
But anyway, you know,
but
I don't know.
But you know what? I could see a tired old neck wanting to feel the warm sun of Miami on it. You know, if you're not going to play in a dome.
Oh, right, which has been his. Yes, that's true. Well, basically though, I'm sure he's desperate to make a run because at this point, his brother is making him look...
Right, and all of those years giving Eli noogies,
yeah,
there's some payback coming. Kind of got to grab him. Oh, okay, David in Tennessee. The tuna? No, tuna long gone.
Okay, well, they was making some noise about him here in San Francisco, and I was thinking, oh, no, crack, crack, in San Francisco, no way.
No, but I still think just for the pure entertainment value of it, Peyton in a Jets uniform.
Well, yeah, no,
you know, with baby bro right across the street.
No, that is the funniest. Oh, listen, I gotta go finish my bolognese sauce. So I'll.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's cooking. I gotta go check.
That's payback for the fried chicken dinner comment, isn't it?
Oh, that's right. Okay, listen, have a good evening.
All right, see you, Sandra. Bye. Bye. Sauce bolognese. Nice meat sauce. Yum. And speaking of dinner, why don't I waited as long as I could, at least for the East Coast diners, so I guess I'll take it out on y'all on the West Coast. Everybody knows about pink slime, right? This stuff that goes into, what's it called now? The original scientists who learned about it called it Soylent Pink. A company called BPI, Beef Products Incorporated. Right after pink slime didn't used to be allowed in meat for human consumption. And back in, the early 90s, a woman named Joanne Smith, who was at the time Undersecretary of Agriculture, decided to allow this pink slime to be called meat. She left the post in 1993. That means she was a loyal Bushy under Pappy Bush. And oddly enough, went straight to a job on the board of directors of Beef Products Incorporated, who had the market cornered on pink slime. And pink slime is now in 70% of the American ground beef supply. Like I said, Carl Custer, who's a retired microbiologist from the Food Safety Inspection Service, said that they used to call it Soylent Pink. It's in 70% of the beef supply. It is comprised... Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? It is comprised by grinding together connective tissue and beef scraps that normally are destined for dog food and rendering. But they grind all this stuff together, and then they treat it with some ammonia hydroxide to kill things like E. coli and salmonella and so forth. And then they blend it into ground beef and hamburger patties. I know places where they still grind the beef into the ground beef, and that's where when I buy it, when we can afford it, that's where I buy it. I would not buy a roll of ground beef. I would not buy Wally World ground beef. Mm-mm. Now, it's caused enough of a stink that a lot of companies have said, oh, well, we don't use this stuff. I love the Orwellian language that's used for this lean, finely textured beef. Pink slime, Soylent Pink. No, a number of fast food restaurants say, you know, they no longer use it as filler in their hamburgers, so that pathetic, ugly, gray disc of meat that you get from the clown or the clown or the thing, or that little red-headed Borgia Wendy supposedly doesn't have it in it. But here's the fun part. It continues to be purchased by the government of we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union. And the government doesn't purchase it to send it over as like foreign aid to starving people or anything, which would be disgusting. No. The federal government continues to purchase pink slime to feed to children. In school lunch programs around the country. Really, we can say in honesty that the government of the United States, and this is not a this is not some sort of proof that school lunches are a bad idea. This is what happens when fiscally responsible conservatives with deep, long, entrenched relationships with corporate food get their hands on the government. Pink slime. We can now say, and be accurate in saying it, that with your tax dollars, the federal government pays massive corporations to feed dog food scraps to our children. David noting, by the Bob, there's a reason. Both of my local markets will grind a store cut into burger, thus I have no worry about pink slime. And if you care about what you eat, you would do well to find a grocery store that is not, that is, that still does grind its own hamburger. The little grocery store up the road from me, the butchers there are real butchers, and you can say, you know, when did you grind? Oh, this morning. Any pink slime in that? Pink what? No. But if it comes in a roll, or, you know, just remember, because, you know, spring and summer are coming, and we like to go out, and we fire up the grill, and we grill burgers, and we put some weenies on, and don't be buying no pre-processed, pre-pattied hamburger patties, no matter how convenient it appears to be. Don't do it. But see, the saddest and most disgusting part of this is that the children who will be fed the dog food, which it is, the children who will be fed the dog food are the poorest of the poor. That is where we are in 2012 in the United States of America. We, granted, the libertarians and the right-wingers and the conservatives and the family values, we don't need to be providing... Remember, okay, I'm sorry, you're sick of Rush Limbaugh, but do you remember when he was advising children to learn how to dumpster dive? Yeah. In 2012, in the United States of America, frequently referred to by the right wing as the most wonderful country in the world, we feed to our poorest children dog food. Dog food flavored with ammonia hydroxide. And the question is, how much traction will this story get? Does this matter enough to generate a... And the thing is, we've got so many things to worry about. I mean, if you... let's see, we're out there writing letters about the Keystone XL pipeline, and that bill did get defeated in the Senate today, yay. But there was a bunch of the usual suspect mugwump Democrats voting for it. Blanche Manchin, he voted for it. Mary Landrieu voted for it. Jim Webb of Virginia voted for it. Teaster from Montana voted for it. Jesus Christ. But you guys and I and we have been very busy opposing it. And we've been busy signing petitions trying to preserve the rights of women to have medical control over their own bodies. Meanwhile, children go to school and their midday break consists of a hearty meal of stuff that barely qualifies to go into an Alpo can. Because, you know, right-wingers, they care about the children. Let's see, I ran Marty off. Heard the pink slime story on Hartman. Thank you very much. Going home. Did Hartman get to the point of drawing the bright line between that stuff and dog food? Probably. Hartman's a smart guy. Yeah, David, they do cut a nice bacon there at the local grocer's. It's right tasty. It's nice when you can have some vague idea of where your food came from, and it's nicer still when it came not from a lab. I read a story the other day where European food scientists have almost reached the point of being able to make vegetable texture just like meat. The pull quote was, "Now we're working on making it taste like something a human being would want to eat." That's always the rub. Quick trip to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Chris from Nanaimo.
Well, hey, Chris.
Not about crazy this time, just about that meat. Why isn't the headline, because you know, the school food programs are only for the poor kids, not for these parochial schools or anywhere where the elite go. Why isn't the headline, FDA approves, or DEA, or who the hell ever it does, FDA approves dog food for consumption by school children. Poor school children.
Yeah, see, that's the question I'm asking. It's not, I mean, pink slime is kind of headline-y, Soylent Pink is headline-y, but it really is a grabber if you say, breaking, school children being fed dog food.
Yeah, but don't think that, you know, this is as bad as it gets. This is actually far superior to what the Japanese are doing to their poor school children. You see, in Japan, they send fleets down to Antarctica to kill whales to bring them up, and they can't sell it to anyone because most people aren't stupid enough to buy it, except in the extreme discount groceries, which are, you know, sold to foreigners and, you know, other poor people, and it's usually mislabeled, and if they can't sell it there, they sell it primarily to the school lunch program all across Japan. So not only have they got reactors going off, they've got these idiots in their government conniving to poison them all, or at least all their children, with heavy metals from the most toxic meat on the planet coming from marine mammals. I mean, they concentrate the stuff that's in the ocean like nothing else. They're vacuum cleaners out there. They just suck it up. And mammals are great at getting this stuff into their tissues, especially their fats. And they've got all kinds of sushis and all kinds of dishes and so forth. And half of it is made out of the fat of the animal. And that's exactly where all these things concentrate. Given Fukushima, give it 5 years, and the radioactive isotopes will probably have penetrated the southern oceans as well. And these
the meat will cook itself.
Oh, damn straight, yeah. You get it on there, it glows in the dark, it'll be the next new Novo thing. You know how the Japanese are looking at.
That was uncalled for, Chris.
Sorry.
You know how the Japanese are when the...
Tim's been pointing me to all kinds of Japanese sites and such, and I've been reading up on... You think you have it bad. You really do. You think, oh my God, what could Bush do next? Cheney is the Antichrist. And then you finally breach the language barrier in some other country's press, and it's like, that's way beyond apocalyptic over there. It's just, you know, it's like the teabaggers actually did take over, and people are listening to them as some sort of authority figures of intellectual importance. I mean, just think of that. Just think of the stupidest, drooling, house helmet-wearing teabagger you've ever seen. One of these, you know, the guy who wrote up the sign, "Get a brain, moron," he's now the head of education.
God almighty.
It's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. And we don't know, but we see the robots, we see the neon, and we don't see, oh, yeah. And they hire Yakuza to pick up people off the street, literally abduct them to work in their nuclear power plant. And these guys come out. They're hot as all get out. You can put a Geiger counter up to it and melt the damn thing. Or, pardon me, up to the person and melt it. They got radiation burns all over them. They're suffering from radiation sickness. But no nuclear authority in the country will admit to ever having hired him. So apparently he just acquires radiation naturally. We should study him for that cold fusion technology we keep looking for. And that's not all. Oh, my God. Japan is just, you know, the low-hanging fruit. You move on to the African subcontinent. Oh, my God. You move over to Russia, and it's like, honestly, America is the testbed for all the bad ideas in the universe.
Well, no, actually, we are the petri dish, because it grows, it leaps out of the petri dish, and then the rest of the world catches it, Chris.
Well, I mean, Russia and these Diebold machines, we've got them up here in our municipal elections. We've got fine provincial and federal elections, but our municipal elections are a complete mess. Our voting,
because you may cast your vote, and the next thing you know, you've won Space Invaders.
Well, what I'm worried about is that I'm an applied computer scientist. I have technical expertise. I hack. I geek. I do all these things, and I'm running for election, and I win. How can they not prima facie evidence charge me with election fraud or, you know, something like that? Because obviously I stole it. I couldn't possibly be that popular. I mean, everybody in the race would have standing to sue my butt because a computer was involved in the election. And since he doesn't have a VCR that thinks 12, he must be responsible.
I got to tell you, Chris, you're on tonight, brother. You're on.
I try not to be. I really do. I'm diving into fantasy and escapist fiction and trying not to pay attention. It's just getting me angry.
Oh, no, I know. I talk a lot about my regular life away from the microphone. I have left these 3 days alone. It's been busy, and it's been frustrating, very frustrating. And see, I'm in one of those places where I realize it's probably unhealthy, but it's what I do. You get to the end of the show, you go, and you make the ice clink in the glass, you pour in a couple of fingers of something potable. I know you don't, but, and I can't do that anymore, so now I just sort of sit and freaking quiver, Chris. I mean, I'm not at the Limbaugh jiggling phase or anything, and I'm not sweating out the dope sick on the air, but it's pressing. And unfortunately, I got to get out of here because I got a minute left.
Oh, God. Well, try the bulk section at your local Quickie Mart. Swedish berries are great for the jitters after the show.
Sounds yummy. Later.
Cheers.
Bye. Chris from Nanaimo. And it is time to get out of here. Thank you for those of you who took this International Day of the Woman and used it to both help the horn and honor those whom you love and who have made your life better. Thank you. Thank you to everybody who makes it go in any way that you can and do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to John and Ben, who are just in internet hell right now. We'll get the website up quick as we can. But at least there was a show. Thank you to my head writer, David, in Tennessee.